first, the hypocrite in me would really struggle to tell you you couldn't wear a shirt for a race you didn't run, because I have a shirt for a race that I didn't run, and I wear it once in a while. Diz Runs Radio, episode 342, starts in 3, 2. Welcome back to Diz Runs Radio, where I talk with runners from all corners of the running world about running, life, and everything in between. I'm your host, Denny Cray, and it's just about time to head out the door for an easy run and a great conversation. So if you're ready, then I'm ready. Let's get started. Hey guys, today's Q&A episode of the show is brought to you by Health IQ. If you haven't checked out Health IQ yet, I would encourage you to do so, even if you're not in the market for life insurance at this time. I've been playing around with it. Every few days, I jump on and take a couple of quizzes. And you know, it's amazing how much you can learn, or maybe sometimes how much you think you know on a subject, and then you start taking a quiz and you realize, hey, wait a second, maybe I don't know as much. Today, I was taking a quiz about citrus fruit, and you know, being in Central Florida, you'd think I'd know a few things about citrus fruit. I did get a few. I got most of the questions right, but I missed one. It turns out that if you're on certain medications, some citrus fruits may not be good for you, based on you know the acids and whatnot. And grapefruit in particular, there was one question about. I can't remember the medication, but you know if you're on certain medications, if I would have thought that citrus fruit would. I mean, it wouldn't be a problem, right? Like it's fruit, it's healthy. Maybe not always the case. So, just, you know, some of those types of things that you can learn from simply taking a few simple quizzes and, you know, you pick up all kinds of topics from, you know, running related stuff, strength training, meditation, yoga, obviously diet. Talked about citrus fruit today and the benefits of citrus fruit, seeing that it is kind of getting into ripe citrus fruit season. So you'll start to see more and more fresh, options, low, you know, recently harvested type of citrus fruits from America, as opposed to, you know, all around the world, maybe getting shipped in at you know, from different climate zones and whatnot. But anyway, healthiq.com/dizruns has been a great supporter of the show. And if you, you know, are looking for ways to improve your health, and especially if you're in the market for life insurance, they would be a great place to go, and it would support the show as well. So, thanks to them. And thanks for you guys for checking out their website and taking some quizzes and you know, just hanging out. And it definitely supports the show. So today is listener Q&A day. It's the end of November 2016. We've got a pretty darn good list of questions today. Not a super long list. I think there's 6 or 7 questions, something like that. But most all of them are pretty, you know, the kind of questions that require a little bit of unpacking. So they're not just quick answers. Not that I ever give quick answers. Lord knows I tend to ramble on a little bit more than maybe sometimes is necessary, but you all bear with me, so I appreciate that. So we're just going to dive right into the first question from Brad today. And he asks, how do you handle easy days when your normal 5-mile running route looks like this? He posted a screenshot of the elevation profile of his, I'm assuming probably his local area, local neighborhood. And it is down and then up and then down and then up and then down and then up. And it's not just, you know, a little gradual, easy little sine curve type of thing. It's some legitimate hills, some things that we don't have here in Central Florida. So how do you handle an easy run or an easy day when that is what you have to deal with? I mean, it all just comes down to effort, Brad. You know, I hate to try to make it sound overly simple, but that's what it is. You know, and this is the type of situation where I would really be a fan of wearing a heart rate monitor, because it'll tell you how hard you're actually working, you know, so you get a decent idea of what an easy type of heart rate is for you, and you stick in that zone. And sometimes that might mean walking up the hill. Sometimes that might mean, you know, literally slowing way down to just a walk, even on your downhills, even on the little bit of flats that you have, just to keep your heart rate in that zone. You know, you can do it on effort based. So like, I mean, does this feel hard? Does this feel easy? And really, I mean, again, you might be walking up the hills, because that's what we want for easy, right? And if you've got a high type of incline, I mean, that is obviously adding several layers of difficulty to it as opposed to running on the flatland. So, you know, you just have to slow it down. It's the same thing, you know, like we have to deal with down here and in a lot of places in the summertime with the heat. When it's really hot, you got to run slower so that your body isn't working as hard to keep yourself cool. I mean, you got to ease it back. You got to adjust to your situation, to your circumstances, to the environment, to the landscape that is around you. But just try to keep it in that easy zone. And then kind of a follow-up, second part of his question is that he assumes that hill repeats are not necessary. I wouldn't go that far. Again, it depends on what you're doing. You know, if you're just running, you know, if that's the route that you're running on your easy days, you're not getting the benefits of powering up the hills or the benefits that I think that many runners overlook. And I've said this several times, of running hard downhill. So that when you get to a race that has some hills in it, do you know how to run downhill? People always complain about the downhills beating them up so bad. I don't feel like I get beat up running downhill very often. You know, I'm sure maybe that I do. And I'm not naive enough to think that there aren't any physiological impacts of running downhill. But the more you practice running downhills, the more confident you get that you can do it. I don't fear a downhill. You know, when I ran Blue Ridge in Virginia, which has, you know, is advertised as the most difficult road marathon in the United States with the amount of elevation they have, I was flying on the downhills and I didn't feel beat up after that at all. And I mean, and those weren't hills, like those were legitimate mountains that I was running down, you know, a couple of miles at a time going down, you know, on the downhill, on the incline going down. And I mean, just flying past people and loving it. And it felt so easy. So I would definitely still encourage you to do hill workouts, to do hill, you know, hill repeats, to do tempo runs there where you're digging up and then you're continuing to push on the down. You know, that's the, like I said, that's the thing that I think most runners do with hill repeats is they run hard up, but then they don't run down. You know, that's a recovery. It's walked back down and run back up the hill. There's a benefit to that workout. But there's also a benefit to running hard on the downhills too. And that could be as part of a tempo run or something of that nature. So I would definitely, you know, I mean, I would use your hills to your advantage on hard days and on easy days. That may mean that your pace is going to be much slower than you want it to be. It may not look as flashy on Strava or something like that, but that's where you have to do what's right for you and not worry about, you know, quote unquote, how it looks to everyone else. And that's what I go through in the summertime. You know, I'm running 10:15, 10:30 on my easy days. If I don't get out and run it at 4 o'clock in the morning, because it's just so freaking hot that I have to slow down that much to allow my body to run, to operate while I'm running at what would be considered an easy rate. So, hopefully that all makes sense to you, Brad. But great question. And something that, you know, could be easy to overlook, but I'm glad you brought it up. Andy has his first question. I believe he's got a couple today, but his first question for today is, how should a person take a break to ease back into training shape? As an example, say a month and a half to 2 month type of break from running, then returning to running regularly, then eventually get into a training plan for a race. He says he wants to be physically prepared to train at the appropriate intensity on the first day of the plan. So kind of, you know, after a couple month break, how do you kind of get back into it so that you rebuild that base, I guess, is probably what the question is kind of how it's going here, so that when you're ready to train, you have something to push off of. You know, there's several things that I could go into here, Andy, but you know, the main things that I'd recommend, obviously to listen to your body, to recognize that in that break, however long that hiatus ends up being, you are going to lose some fitness, and that's okay. And I'm not saying that to try to discourage you from taking the break to, you know, because life or because of whatever, you just are burned out and you need a little break. I mean, I've been there before. I've taken the break to just allow myself a little bit of space and to come back to running and actually look forward to it. But when you do that, you need to start slow. You know, you need to adjust your pace down. You need to adjust your mileage down. You need to you know, I think most of, I'll speak for myself. I don't spend as much time doing the restorative work as I should. You know, the foam rolling, the strength training, and the cross training, all those things that I talk about all the time. They're important, and I recognize their importance, and I do some of that stuff, but I don't do as much as I should. And I think that I hope that's fair to say that a lot of folks probably don't, because I mean, we're busy. We got all these other things that we got going on in life, and we're making sure we can get our runs in. But those other things are important. But especially when you're coming back from a break, your body is not used to the pounding You know, not only are you, you know, has some of your cardiovascular fitness, your running fitness gone away, but you know, your bones aren't used to the stress anymore. The tendons, the joints, the small muscles aren't used to what it feels like for them to run. So you need to ease back in, but also spend extra time being extra careful to take care of them, to make sure that you're, you know, getting enough recovery time, to get enough sleep, get enough water and massage, you know, again, foam rolling, massaging, strengthening, stretching, all that good stuff. And then just progress, you know, be patient, give yourself plenty of time. Don't think that after you take 2 months off, you can, in 2 weeks, you'll be ready to start training. You know, give yourself a couple of months to build that base back, to do basically nothing but easy runs. To just build that base level of fitness back up, maybe a couple of tempos or something like that once in a while, but mostly easy running, and really building that back up. You know, I would say that I mean, you're looking at 6 weeks, 8 weeks. The longer, the better. You know, that's the one thing about endurance sports, is that the more time, the more runway you have, the better. Because it's all about improvement over time. So give yourself plenty of time. But if you need to take a step back from running for a bit, for whatever reason, do it. Don't force yourself to keep running to become, you know, bitter about it, or to become further burnt out about it, or whatever. Just take a step back and then recognize that you're going to have to give yourself plenty of time to ease back into it, to build that base back up, so that when it's time to hammer some repeats, so when it's time to hammer a tempo run, you're ready. And as always with everybody's training, no matter where you are, as far as taking time off, just getting started, been doing it for years, the most important thing you can always do is listen to your body, because our bodies will tell us if something's not right. And if you listen to that and give yourself a couple days off, you know, get on the foam roller, do some stretching, see somebody, go see a physical therapist or a massage therapist or whatever. You know, you can nip so many small problems in the bud, but we don't listen. We keep going. The training plan says, so I have to keep running. And then we end up out for weeks due to injury. So you don't want to do that. So just listen to your body, Andy, and you'll figure it out. I mean, you've been doing this long enough that you know when your body is ready. But just give yourself plenty of time. And there's no, you know, as with most things, there's no one size fits all. You need X amount of time. You just have to listen to your body. The longer you take off, the more time you'll need to get back to being ready to hit that training plan from the start. Julie has a great question. She says, what do you suggest is some of the best ways to give back to the running community? She says she'd like to volunteer at some races next year, but what else can she do? So obviously volunteering is one of the biggest things. I mean, let's be 100% honest. No matter what race it is, no matter how much the entry fee is for a race, there would not be races if there weren't volunteers. So, I mean, that's easily, in my opinion at least, easily the biggest thing that we can do. That I need to do a better job of doing is giving back and volunteering and helping out. You know, just at the local level. I mean, that makes such a huge difference for the small races that need somebody to watch streets so that cars are aware that runners are coming, or to stop traffic for a minute while all the runners run by or whatever. So that type of stuff in packets at a local race. You know, even if you're not volunteering on race day, you can still volunteer with registration, with, you know, if there's a packet pickup the night before, to hand packets out, to do whatever. Your local running club. I mean, join the local running club. Maybe you can, you know, be a board member or, you know, just help out with activities with races that are going on in your area. You know, that's a possibility. Outside of those types of things. I mean, really the opportunities are endless. Excuse me, need a little coffee there, but. I mean, you know, there's all kinds of organizations. There's Girls on the Run comes to mind. Andy posted a reply, for those that aren't on the Facebook group, he posted something about the Southwest Missouri Running Camp. So there's different camps that maybe serve as mentors or things for, you know, that's obviously Southwest Missouri. If you're not in that area, it may not apply, but there's similar types of camps, similar types of outreach things that, you know, nonprofits, for-profits, all those types of things that you can possibly volunteer with or be a mentor for or sponsor kids to go run at. I mean, shoot, there's there's ways to give back to the running community just online, to support people, to connect with people that are maybe new to running and aren't, you know, get a little bit intimidated by seeing some of the distances that those of us that have been running for years maybe post online, and go, gosh, I'm only running twice a week, and my total mileage is 6 miles, and I'm basically walking half of it anyway. I'm not a runner. Just doing those types of things that may not feel like quote unquote volunteer work, but you're strengthening the community. You're giving back. You're reminding folks that are new to our sport that there's room for them at the table, you know, and maybe you share your story and go, yeah, a few years ago I was right where you are. But you know, if this is something that you want to do and you keep doing it and you keep learning and you keep asking questions and you keep interacting and just being a part of, you know, finding other runners to talk to, like, you'll learn and you'll get better. And you know, maybe your goal is never to run fast, but just to enjoy it, you know, but just sharing your story can go a long way. But again, all the different organizations, I know since you are in the coterie, Julian, and I know a little bit more about, you know, some of your stuff that you do that you already do, you know, take part in, kind of a running group as a mentor or a coach. So you're already giving back in that area as well. So, you know, there's those options. Really, I mean, just about anything you can think of, you know, from fundraising to organizing to race day stuff to just being present, and sharing your story, I think that helps. I know stuff that I enjoy. I enjoy seeing people that have been running as long as I am and are still, you know, struggling to reach their goals just like I am, because it makes me feel like maybe I'm not as much of a putz as sometimes I, you know, in an honest moment I think, God, like, I'm not. What do I need to do? You know, and it helps to combat some of that self-doubt that again, I think all of us from time to time is maybe part of the human condition, that we all have self-doubt at times. And so just having other people around to support us can be invaluable. So shoot, Julie, just keep doing what you're doing. God, goodness gracious. You're doing great. Both as a runner and as connecting people on social media, cause I see that stuff too. So keep on doing what you're doing. And if you add a couple of races that you volunteer to, I mean, my goodness, you'll be giving back in a big way. So it's appreciated for sure. Question from Gene, and this is one that I really don't have much of an answer for, but I'll try to make something up. It says, I'm looking for a rain jacket with a hood for running. The one I have now is better off not wearing at all. I get soaked from sweat. So the if I'm reading that right, the idea is, what is a good jacket to run in that keeps the rain off of you, but yet it still breathes enough that you don't get so soaked with the sweat and just the heat trapped inside? And I mean, that's a tough balance to strike. And honestly, I don't even have any great suggestions to offer right now, because I don't have a good running rain jacket. You know, all of my kind of long sleeve running type of jackets that I have are basically just kind of windbreaker type of material. They don't breathe really, really well, and they're certainly not going to keep the rain off of me if I got stuck out in a rainstorm. That said, running in Florida, I don't mind running in the rain most of the year, because most of the year it's, you know, 75, 80 degrees when it's raining. So it actually, I look forward to running in the rain. But for, you know, if you're somewhere where that's not always the case, I honestly don't know. I don't have a good answer for you, Gene. I would look at maybe like REI or, some of those types of stores, some of the outdoorsy types of stores, and see what things that they have. And maybe there's some people listening that could jump in on the thread, either on Facebook or in the show notes for this episode, dizruns.com/342. And you know, if you're a trail runner, or if you have a good idea of what a good brand of rain jacket might be, or, you know, weather jacket for runners that still breathes, but keeps you somewhat dry, let Gene know, because I don't have anything. So sorry, Gene. Great question. I just don't have much of an answer. Another question. This one from Madeline. This is a great question. This one really is. I mean, it's just a tough one, but here it is. When is it time to stop chasing a PR? Is it an age thing or just completely individual? She says she's PR'd in the half twice this year, but think it might be wise to choose some new goals. Yes, I think that you answered the question perfectly there, Madeline, but I'll address it a little bit more or unpack it a little bit more. I think it is absolutely a completely individual thing. Obviously, age can play a factor. So if you know, for people that started running when they were in high school and maybe ran competitively in college or something like that, or just ran very regularly, you know, in your early 20s, you're probably going to set some time, you know, some great goals. And by the time you're in your 40s, 20 years later, odds are you're probably not going to hit those same times. So age does have a factor. I mean, let's not kid ourselves. As we get older, we're going to slow down. We need more time for recovery, yada, 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 yada. That said, there's no reason that you can't keep improving as you get older. You know, talk to plenty of folks that started running in their 30s and they're setting PRs in their late 40s and early 50s. So, you know, age isn't a definitive. Yes, as you get older, you're not going to be able to run faster. So age can play a part, but that doesn't mean that you can't still have certain time goals like a master's PR or something like that. So, but I digress. I think more importantly, it just comes down to you individually. If you're the type of person that's always been competitive, or are just have gotten a taste for racing and the competitiveness and pushing yourself to try to better yourself time wise, I don't think there's any reason that you need to stop chasing a PR. Now, that doesn't exactly sound like you, because as you said, you think it might be wise to chase new goals. If pushing yourself to run a faster half marathon, to run a faster 5K, to run a faster whatever doesn't get you going anymore, then I think you're right. Then I think it is time to find a new goal to chase, whether that's running farther, whether that's encouraging others, whether that's being a mentor to newer runners, whatever it might be. I mean, there's a dozen different other goals that you could have, that could be running specific, or running could be kind of ancillary to it, you know, as far as like health and things like that, you know, improving your resting heart rate or whatever. I mean, there's a bunch of different goals that you could work towards, and running can still be a part of. You could work on running different distances. You could work on running, you know, just a goal of running X number of races and not worried about running fast. So maybe you run, you know, maybe there's some local races that you could squeeze in 2 or 3 5Ks in one day. So you're not racing any of them hard, but the times are spread out enough that you can go from one finish, grab a cup of water, get in the car, get to the next one, and then get to the next one. You know, you do stuff like that. So I think that it definitely individual. I mean, running is an individual sport. We all have our reasons that we do it. We all have our things that we like about it, and probably some things that we don't like about it. But yeah, I mean, whatever gets you going, if it's a time goal, keep chasing time goals, keep chasing those PRs. Obviously you had some success this year with two half marathon PRs. That's impressive. But if you don't want to race hard at the next race, don't race hard at the next race, you know, and maybe after a couple of races of just having fun and, you know, stopping to take pictures or whatever, maybe you'll get that itch in another year or two. You're like, man, I wonder. And then you can try it. Then you can chase the PR again. But yeah, if you're not fired up about, you know, really pushing yourself in training and really pushing yourself and testing your limits on race day, there's no reason that you need to do that. And you know, there's no reason that you have to give it up ever, you know, completely either. You know, it kind of comes down to how are you feeling? What do you want to do? How's your training going? All that good stuff. So hopefully somewhere in all of that, it made sense for you, Madeline, but a great question, but definitely individual. You know, you do you. I'll do me. Everybody else does everybody else. And you know, at the end of the day, we're all, as long as we're enjoying what we're doing, that is what matters the most. Before we get to Steven's question, I do want to mention Health IQ once again. Just a wealth of great information. You know, again, from diet to reduced, dramatically reduced prices for life insurance. If that's something you're in the market for, healthiq.com/dizruns. Let them know you heard about them on the show, which if you go through that link, they'll know, because that's how they track it. And you can get some pretty good rates because you're a runner, because you care about your health, because you want to be healthier. You can get some rates that you can't get if you just go through the regular insurance guy or the regular online place to get life insurance, term life insurance. So healthiq.com/dizruns. Thank you again to Health IQ for sponsoring the show. Steven, we got 1, 2, 3, four more questions. So just past halfway mark. This is a fun question from Steven, who always has a pretty fun question. It says, race shirt etiquette. I was supposed to run a marathon last weekend. This is a couple weekends ago as the question was posted, but that part of it is irrelevant. I was supposed to run a marathon. However, on the way to the race, a little car critter interaction that prevented him from getting to the race. The car was not in such good shape. He's fine, thankfully, but he didn't make it to the race. And a friend was nice enough to grab his shirt and bring it to him. It's an awesome hooded long sleeve tech shirt, and I really want to wear it. However, not having run the race, a part of me wouldn't feel right wearing it. Do you think it's okay to wear a shirt that you didn't earn? He says he'd hate to have a $75 oil rag. So many things on this question, Steven. So many things. First, the hypocrite in me would really struggle to tell you you couldn't wear a shirt for a race you didn't run, because I have a shirt for a race that I didn't run, and I wear it once in a while. When I was in grad school up in Tennessee, I was working with the track and cross country team, and they had the Murfreesboro half marathon. They helped out with that race, and all of the athletes or the coaches or whatever had a box of t-shirts. They were nice long sleeve tech t-shirts, or not t-shirts, long sleeve shirts. I wasn't much of a runner at that time, and I certainly didn't have any long sleeve tech shirts because I wasn't running races or anything like that. And so when one of the coaches was like, "Hey, you want one of these shirts? We've got only about 60 extras." I was like, "Yeah, sure." Like it was awesome. So I still wear my Murfreesboro half marathon shirt once in a while. I don't wear it very much anymore because I have so many other race shirts. But in good faith, I couldn't just tell you, no, you can't do it. Then when you add the fact that it's a good shirt, it's hooded, it could be a great shirt to wear to run in. I don't see why you couldn't wear it, or why you shouldn't wear it, maybe is the better way of saying it. I don't see why you would need to feel like you didn't earn it. Yes, you didn't run the race, but it wasn't like you wimped out. It wasn't like you just didn't do it because, ABC, like you had a legitimate reason. You were on your way. You were going to go earn the shirt. You and I both know that you could run, a marathon. It wouldn't have been like a, I don't know if I could finish or not type of thing. Like you could have done it. You probably ran the next day 26 miles just because you'd trained for it. So why not? So I think you could wear it. Maybe you wouldn't wear it around as much, like maybe you wouldn't wear it on an airplane. You wouldn't wear it if you were going where a bunch of people were going to see it because like you said, you didn't earn it. Maybe that's where I would kind of draw the line, but just around town, just around the house to run in. Why not, man? Why not? That's one of those that's kind of to each their own. If you feel guilty about it, then that's one thing. But if other people are like, oh, whatever, like who cares? It's just like, just like anything else where if you're comfortable with it, you do you. Kind of like Madeline's question about chasing PRs and whatnot. You do you with the PRs, you do you with the shirt. But I can't tell you not to wear it because I have a half marathon shirt that I didn't run that I still wear once in a while. So take that for what it's worth. Bart says, tell me about a training run where the intention was something short, but because you felt so good, wound up turning something like a 6 miler into a half marathon. Ooh, Bart. I thought about this yesterday, and I usually don't look through these questions beforehand, and I'm glad I did, but I still don't have much of an answer. I really can't think of any times offhand, so certainly not in the last year, where I set out to just do 2 or 3 miles and ended up doing 6, 8, 10, 12. It just doesn't happen like that for me very often, in large part because it's kind of one of those things where, and I've talked with ultra marathoners about this on the show, where, when I have in my mind, this is what I'm going to do, even if it's just an easy run, it's like when I get to that point, like I'm ready to stop, I'm done. And a lot of times it's not only am I ready to be finished for the day, but I also I have 35 minutes before I have to get ready for the next part of the day. So I have to squeeze a run in and, I just can't go much longer. Like I can maybe squeeze 40 minutes if I want to, cut it close on an interview or on another appointment or something that I need to do. But it's like, you know, I've got this window and I need to run in it, and it's an easy day. So yeah, it feels good and I could definitely go more, but I have to stop. So I can't really think of any of those. There's maybe been a couple times with a long run where I was planning on doing like 12, and then maybe a couple other folks that were doing like 13 or 14 or 15. So I ended up going a little bit farther with them. But more often my struggle is when things go worse and I'm like, yeah, I was going to do 10 today, but, this is sucking. So I'm going to shut it down at 7, you know? So that's more of my problem. I'm not very often in that situation where things feel so good that I just say, screw it and keep running. It's still a great question. And if you've had one of those situations, Bort, or anybody else, I'd love to hear about it. Cause I would be jealous. I would be jealous of, you know, going twice as far as planned just because things were feeling great. That's a good problem to have. A few more questions. Tom says he knows how I like talking Boston. So here's the situation. He ran his second marathon a couple weeks ago and posted a BQ for the 2018 race. However, there's always a however, right? However, my time is only 1 minute and 42 seconds under the standard. Will this be enough, or should I do a spring marathon and try to post a better time to make sure I get in? I'd like to actually run Boston, but would also enjoy having a little break of not racing hard in the spring. So let me know what to do. Hoo-wee. Tom, you are right in that gray area of you're probably safe, but damn, if it was me, I would run another race to try to get myself another minute or two. I don't know the numbers offhand because I haven't been close enough to worry that much. But I want to say last year it was like 130, you know, something like that. 125, 130 was the cushion you needed. So at 142, you would have just snuck in. But obviously there's no way of knowing for sure. But I like to think that two and a half to 3 minutes will guarantee it. And obviously I loosely use guarantee because there is no official guarantee other than like, if you're 10 minutes under, you're pretty much, you're not gonna have a problem. But you know, if you're 2 to 3 minutes, you're pretty much safe. If you're less than a minute, you're probably not going to get in. If you're between 1 minute and 2 minutes of cushion, like, whew, that's nail biting time. So I am certainly not going to tell you to not run a spring race. In my heart of hearts, I don't think you need to. But if you really want to run Boston in 2018, you should. I would not be comfortable if it was me. All right. So I'm just going to tell you, like you said, I love talking Boston. I've made no qualms about the fact that that is what I want to do, that I want to qualify for and run Boston. And if I was at 142, I wouldn't chance it. I would know that I had it. You know, I would know that I had a time that might get me in, but I would find another race to try to add another 30 seconds to a minute to my cushion. So I'd be at, 230, 240, maybe 3 minutes. So, that would be at that point, I would be able to breathe easily at 142. Oh man, I would be a freaking wreck for the time between when you sign up and when you know if you made it or not. So, I'm not going to make the decision for you. I'm not going to tell you what to do. If it was me, I would probably run another race, just to try. And if it doesn't, if I had a bad race, if things blew up, I would try to rest easy, knowing that I still had a legitimate shot at making the cutoff. But I'd rather be able to sleep easy, knowing that I got, I could better that race and get another minute or two faster and give myself a little more time. And I think you're at the point where if you're going to do a spring race, try to stack the deck in your favor. Try to find a race that's a net downhill. Try to find a race that, you know, the weather's going to be good, or that you know the course, if there's something local that you know the course, so you can run it a few times, or at least run chunks of it, so that you can be comfortable with where you're going to go. Really, you know, for me, I don't need to try to stack the deck in my favor yet, because there's not going to be those little type of hacks that are going to knock an hour off of my time. But when you get down to minutes, that's where it really makes a difference. So my recommendation would be to run, but it's up to you. That's up to you. Congratulations on your BQ though. That's freaking awesome. And you should be very proud of that. Without question. So, we got the last question today is from Andy, and he says, like I said, the second question from Andy, my last marathon I was hammering my finish kick to the finish line, and in parentheses says, try to fool people into thinking I was running a 6:30 pace for the entire time. Andy, nobody thought you were running a 6:30 pace for the entire time, because if you were, you would have finished 2 hours before you finished. So don't worry about that. You weren't confusing anybody, but you looked good. You looked good trying to finish, I'm sure. But anyway, said when he was hammering that 6:30 pace, something new happened. Let's see here, where am I? I assume it was some sort of cramp. The cramp forced my toes on one foot to curl under uncomfortably. This would last for a few seconds, release, then happen again a few more times. I'm thinking a cramp in the digitorum longus, since the big toe was not involved. How do I avoid that nonsense in the future? Do I need to do some toe curls to strengthen that area? Thanks. First and foremost, I wouldn't worry about trying to nail it down to the specific muscle. You've got so many little muscles in your feet that all do a bunch of different, you know, that all work together, basically. And one of those, yes, was probably cramping up. Since it wasn't, if it wasn't your big toe, it would actually make it your digitorum, I believe. Or your digitorum works on your big toe and the flexor hallucis, I believe. Unless I'm thinking ham, but I'm pretty sure it's the digitorum muscles work with the big toe. The hallucis muscles work with the little toes. But we don't need to get lost in the weeds there. That part of it isn't that important. What exactly muscle it was? It was a muscle that impacts the little toes. That I would bet you're probably right that it was cramping. In large part because like they're already fatigued and now you're freaking superheroing it at 6:30 pace and they're going, what the hell is going on? And the muscles are cramping up a little bit. The reason that they kept, you know, that they would cramp release is that those muscles are little. They don't have a lot of strength and stamina, so that they grab and they can't hold that contraction for very long, so they release. And then you keep stressing them, you keep putting the demands of running hard, they grab again and they release, and they grab again and then they release. And since it was only that type of muscle, that little muscle in your foot, it's not like you could say that it was probably a salt issue or that it was probably a dehydration issue or an imbalance of electrolytes or anything like that. It was probably just, you know, the way that your foot hits, the strength of those muscles. Like, yes, strengthening would probably help. And you could do toe curls with a towel scrunches or things like that. Even just walking around barefoot more, which maybe in the wintertime isn't as enjoyable, but I mean, even like in the house, you know, just put some socks on, some thick socks to keep your feet warm and walk around barefoot. That'll help strengthen the muscles in your feet. Walking on your tiptoes, walking on your heels, heel walks, toe walks, things like that are all good. But yeah, it's probably just a strength thing, and most likely only because you were trying to freaking superhero it through the finish shoot. If you would have just kept going at your normal nine minute pace, 8:30 pace, whatever it was that you were running, you know, for the bulk of the race, if you would have kept doing that, I doubt that you would have had that issue crop up on you like you did when you just put your foot on the gas. So, work on some strength in your feet maybe. But to avoid that nonsense in the future, just run your race, big fella. Don't worry about looking like a rock star at the finish line. And when you're able to actually run a 6:30 pace for an entire marathon, your feet will be strong enough from the work that you're doing to do that the entire race that you won't have that problem. So I wouldn't stress too much about it long term. But take care of yourself. Keep those muscles in your feet stronger with just some simple exercises. Like I said, even just walking around the house barefoot will do wonders for you. So that's it. That's it for this week's questions. And it looks like we still managed to burn up about 40 minutes. if nothing else, I can talk. And you talk to my wife about that and she'll laugh because I don't say anything outside of like the podcast. This is like the only time I talk to anybody. And I'm not even talking to people today. I mean, I don't know. You know what I'm saying? I'm not having a conversation with somebody. I'm just doing all the yapping myself. But great questions, guys. And if you're new around these parts or if you haven't listened to the show before, thanks for hanging out. And if you want to get your questions answered next month, because we do these Q&A episodes on the last part of every month, you can submit your questions anytime. But the best way to make sure that they get in the show is to head over to our Facebook group, which is a pretty fun place to be, I think, and it's getting better. And we're looking at ways and continuing to make it more fun and more engaging and you know, just a great hangout, a great community of runners, sharing stories, supporting each other, helping out, asking questions, answering questions, whatever. But anyway, somewhere in the middle of each month, I put a post up that says, "Hey, Q&A is coming. Ask your questions." And That's where all these questions came from. They're all in one place. I don't have to worry about losing them. Every once in a while, somebody will email me a question or tweet me a question, and that's fine. But there's always a chance that those questions get lost in the shuffle. So if you're on Facebook, just search for Diz Runs and join the group. You can like the page if you want. That's fine. But the group is where the interaction is, where it takes place. And if you're not like actively on Facebook at the moment, you can always just type in dizruns.com/Facebook and that'll redirect you right to the page. And I think you have to click like request to join or something like that. But no worries. You're gonna get approved and we pretty much approve everybody. And then the people that start spamming the group with you know, buy Oakley sunglasses for $7 or whatever, because I think we've had a couple of those, or t-shirts or whatever, just stupid stuff, then I'll kick those people out. So as long as you just want to come and hang out and talk running and crack some jokes and you know, and just have a good time, we want to have you. So come on down, and then that gives you a great chance to get your questions answered next month as well. So anyway, until then, have a great rest of the week. Thanks for taking the time to listen to the show. Thanks for the questions. Couldn't do Q&A episodes without the Qs. So appreciate everybody who submitted the questions. Andy, Tom, Bart, Steven, Madeline, Jean, Julie, and Brad. So thank you guys for the questions. Appreciate y'all. And have a great rest of the day. We'll talk soon. But until then, take care of yourselves. See you guys.